The plan is to make sure that I have everything done. Everything's ready to go before I turn off the fan. Like, that's the last possible moment.
I went ahead and left the windows shut so that we didn't have to cross that bridge.
Sometimes it is a bridge too far.
Because if they're open, we feel that, and we want to leave them open as long as possible. But if they're just closed...
You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know this, the fan is remote. I have a remote control for it.
I've heard that. I may have heard it on this podcast, actually. What's up? This is Movies On Up. There are no limits. There is a co-host, Mr. Dave Becella.
And I have no limits.
No limits at all. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. There are no limits is our tagline contest for this week. If you think you know what movie that tagline comes from, you can send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can email it to us at moviesonup@gmail.com. You can put your guess on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guess to us at moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, you will have a hell of a time with our new handy-dandy prize package, which will be sent directly to your home. This week, I guess it's Halloween kickoff week still. There are 31 days in October, so if you'd like to watch a different movie every day, we give you the tools to do that. And we did that a couple days ago, so we hope that you had a good time with that.
It was a blast to record.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, we had special guests. We had Michael Fassbender. It was great. But for our second episode, we are going to hit you with two episodes a week for the month of October. This week, we decided that we would start our movie episodes with a movie that is very near and dear to Dave's heart, and a movie that he's brought up a couple times over the last couple months, and that is Clive Barker's Nightbreed.
Just recently, too. Like, I feel like in the first few years, it didn't come up at all, but it's been coming up. We did Danny Elfman episode, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it came up there.
Just, I think even a time before that, and I can't really remember the context.
I don't know why. I remember bringing it up at some point.
Yeah, it started to sort of reach consciousness last year when I think it showed up on Netflix. I think we already chosen the movies that we wanted to do and probably had already even recorded most of them. But when it came to trying to find movies for this year, it did seem that Nightbreed was sort of a shoe-in because Dave likes it so much and because it had been bubbling at the surface. So, without further ado, Clive Barker's Nightbreed from 1990, starring Craig Sheffer and Bobby and David Cronenberg. Yes, in fact, that David Cronenberg. Opened to $3.7 million on February 16th, 1990. Happy Valentine's Day. Good for sixth place behind Driving Miss Daisy, Hard to Kill, Revenge, Madhouse, and Born on the 4th of July. It went on to gross $8.8 million domestically. Good for 4,553rd place all time. Just behind a 1998 film that could have made our Nazi movie list a couple weeks ago.
Apt Pupil.
Apt Pupil it is. And one spot above the fifth of the Apes films, and that would be...
Conquest?
I think that was the fourth. Battle for the Planet of the Apes. They start to not make so much sense between, beneath, around, adjacent to, whatever. Battle for the Planet of the Apes is the movie that is one spot below Nightbreed. A couple movies from this year, actually, inhabit similar space. You've got The Lobster with just over $9 million. That's in...
Solid movie.
45-23. I've heard good and bad. I hear you either really like it or you really hate it. I'm kind of hoping to really like it. That one's out on the DVD, and I'll get there eventually. And a movie that we kind of talked about before we started rolling, Ratchet & Clank. That cartoon at 45-57 with about $8.8 million as well. Sticking with the box office and... instead of going all time, kind of looking at Clive Barker movies, this one I would say is the least successful. It did outgross Midnight Meat Train, but that really didn't have a wide release, so I'm not going to count it. It came out at almost the height of Barker being Barker, 3 years after the original Hellraiser and 2 years before Candyman. So I guess my question would be, Hellraiser was not a franchise at that point. Candyman was not a franchise at that point. So why do you think that Nightbreed didn't catch on the same way the other two movies did? And they are his first and second highest grossing movies.
I mean, it's a...
I need the answer, the definite answer, please.
It doesn't have your iconic character. Like, even Candyman, obviously built around Candyman. Hellraiser, Pinhead was marketed as... Right. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to...
Not a lot of Pinhead in that movie.
No, there's a lot more to Hellraiser than Pinhead.
Right.
But you had that face. There's no real face of Nightbreed, I don't think. Something like Candyman or Hellraiser, that's the kind of movie you take your girlfriend to, or Nightmare, or Friday the 13th, and like she's scared enough to like... Nightbreed's not really like that. It's a slasher movie, but it's not a slasher movie. It's a love story, but it's not a love story. Like, it's a demon movie. Pretty solid demon movie. There's a lot going on, and I don't remember the marketing of this movie. I remember reading the book. I remember when the movie came out, but I don't remember a lot behind the marketing. I don't know how you market this movie.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it's Hellraiser, you can market it as a horror movie, and it is a horror movie, and I don't think anybody would argue with you on that. And Clive Barker, again, from the guy that brought you Hellraiser, I think is a way that you could market it, but certainly it didn't find that same audience that Hellraiser did, and it certainly didn't find the audience that the guy who brought you Hellraiser would find with Candyman. And those you can sort of put in a Pandora's box of horror, and it makes a lot of sense. This one is much tougher to find, and maybe that was sort of the problem. But where it maybe differed from Hellraiser in that it's not quite as straightforward, I think there are certainly some similarities in that they both involve demons quite a lot, and there did seem to be this notion of some heavy mythology, which is something that, at least in the first two Barker movies, I think it's something that he does very well. You kind of dig more into the Hellraiser mythology as that franchise goes on, but it seemed like Nightbreed could have maybe followed that same path, but it was all contained in one movie.
It was self-contained, but it felt like there was more there. It's not a movie I watch and I think, man, I wish I had Nightbreed 2 and 3 and 4. I don't watch it and I don't think that, but I think, man, especially in like today's television landscape, a 10 to 12 episode season of Nightbreed would be phenomenal. Like, there's so much story there, and he fits it in here, and it's self-contained, and oddly enough, I don't think it ever feels rushed. Like, I really don't. Clive Barker doesn't direct a lot of movies, but when he does, they're efficient. And this is actually a pretty, for as much as going on, it's well-paced, and I don't think it's rushed ever, but I don't think it leaves you hanging. I feel like the end gets kind of cluttery, but other than that, like, it's solidly solid.
Solidly solid. Well put.
Put that on the posters.
Solidly solid. Movies on up. I do think that there's sort of an inherent problem when you have the author of a book writing his own adaptation and then directing it. There's really no other voices in the creative process, and nothing gets cut because, you know, we're talking to the author of the book and the screenwriter and the director, so everything is basically direly important. I think that there was a lot of mythology within the tribe itself, how they came to be, sort of the backstory of Midian that I believe was kind of hinted at in the movie, but having not read the book, I feel like I missed out on a lot of that, whereas I think I got a little taste of a lot of things, and it just wasn't in detailed enough. You, who are a fan of the book, have read the book.
I read the book when I was in sixth grade, so I don't...
Well, certainly, but...
I don't remember much of the book.
So at this point, it'd be difficult for you to kind of compare and contrast.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I guess I just, when I had mentioned that the possibility of how Hellraiser kind of expounded on the Cenobites, how they came to be, and the story of the box, I felt like figuring out how Midian came to be and how those creatures came to all be there would have been a big part and could have been a big part of the story, but I don't feel like it was addressed at all, really.
No.
And maybe in the most basic of ways.
It's weird because, all right, here's this secret. I use that in the loosest of air quotes.
Right.
Secret community of these, like, undead mutants. But yeah, they're not hiding very well. The girlfriend, Lori, goes in and within 10 minutes, like, she sees one and then she sees another one, you know, the... the cops raid in, and within 10 minutes, like, oh, they found one. And even the people in the town are like, oh, I don't go there. And so it's just like...
And it's not even like, you know, you have to, only if you go there at night, because I think the girlfriend went there
Ward was there in the middle of the day.
Right, yeah.
The cops the first time were there in the middle of the day. So it's just weird, because it's like they were there, but it's almost like they were known about. But yet when Boone shot and disappeared and shows up there, it's like this, oh, what's going on? Where, you know, something's going on there.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like, and even the fella that Cronenberg goes to visit later on in the movie, he knew about it. The crazy fella that Aaron Bleepin' Boone meets early on in the movie, he knows about it. Like you said, it's the worst kept secret in the area, I suppose. To me, it just felt like you just kind of have to look past all that, just like take for granted that this place is here. And conceivably, it's been here for a long time. They seem like they have some traditions and a way of life there that have been passed
on. It's working, yeah.
Right, yeah. Although all that stuff seems to go out the window as soon as this movie starts, in that we're now biting, we're, what do you call them, the meat? Like, you're not supposed to...
Yeah, there's rules that they live by. But in a way, like, that's what Boone's purpose is. He is cabal. He is there to
upset
the natural order, destroy everything, and rebuild. So
he succeeded in that, that's for sure.
Yeah. When he shows up, like, maybe just instinct is to just start breaking the rules.
I suppose the idea of why he goes there to begin with is because he thinks that he is a serial killer, so he is inherently a bad person. So on the one level, you do have that serial killer element of the movie. So is it a serial killer movie? Sure. Is it a monster movie? Yeah, there's a ton of monsters in it. Can you say it's an action movie? Well, if you watch the last 30 minutes, of course
it's an action it's a war movie in the last 30 minutes.
Right, yeah. Is it a horror movie? Yeah. I feel like it checks a lot of genre boxes, but doesn't
love story?
Yeah, that's in there too. But doesn't really succeed at being a great example of any one particular genre, which I don't know if that's an actual criticism.
See, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think there's a handful of movies you can say that about, and I don't think in any of them it's a knock on, especially for Clive Barker, somebody like him whose name is synonymous with horror. Like, you're not just getting a straight-up horror movie. You're not just getting a slasher movie, even though you have one of the coolest slashers. Decker is an awesome killer. The mask and how he moves and everything, like, he's an awesome slasher that they could have done so much more with. But here he's not a B character in the movie because he's pretty central to the whole thing, but he's kind of overlooked by everything else going on.
The serial killer aspect is sort of a subplot, but I liked that character. And the mask, you're right, the mask is super creepy. It sort of reminded me of like Sam Hain from Trick or Treat, with the stitched mouth being a bit obscure. I liked the premise of the psychiatrist setting up a patient by using their own delusions as the basis for these actual crimes. And I think that premise alone, take out all the Midian stuff, could have been developed into a really, really cool slasher movie instead of just being used as a subplot here. I feel like it's almost wasted.
In a way, yeah. It's almost like there's two good movies here that are just kind of mixed together. Because you have a good serial killer story, you have this good demonic world story. Where they come together is kind of muddled. It gets to a point where it's like, what is Decker's purpose? Like, what is he trying to do? And that gets kind of lost. Overall, his motivation is just kind of like, okay, he wants to make Boone think he's a serial killer. Mission accomplished. Oh, he's got a gun. He gets the police to shoot the crap out of him. Now he's dead. Oh, now he's missing. Now he's a demon. Now I must kill him. Like, it just doesn't make much sense there.
You would think. I can understand it where if he has the desire to become a serial killer, he's created basically the perfect fall guy so he can commit these crimes. Everyone, including Boone, is going to believe that it was him that did it. So he's got the perfect fall guy. But when he leads the police to him and gets him shot, at that point, he's kind of used up his alibi, so to speak. I guess maybe he was done being a serial killer at that point, because it seems like you wouldn't want him necessarily to get killed.
Yeah, but I mean, so up until that point it makes sense, but then the fascination when he becomes a demon to insist on killing a demon, even though you've stabbed him already and nothing happened. Like, you want to just keep going after him. And
I guess it's not just Boone the demon, but he wants to kind of catch them all, so to speak. So you have a certain amount of creatures that we see throughout probably the first two acts. But then when we really get into the onslaught at the end, you see a ton of different creatures. And as
in all practical.
Right. As with most Barker movies, you have a lot of practical prosthetic effects. And I thought that that part held up just as well as Hellraiser does. Mark Collier worked here, who worked on Hellraiser 2 and 3, Candyman, and the Waxwork movies, which, say what you want about Waxwork 2. I kind of like the first one, and the creature effects were really neat, and they were really cool here. My only beef is I found it hard to kind of keep track of all the cool creatures at the end. Like, did this one get killed? Or
yeah, because it's so muddled. It becomes right. Such a... I like the climax. It builds up to this big war, but yet, what are they called? The free people or whatever, the rednecks with guns.
Yeah.
They just kind of come out of nowhere, essentially. Like, they're not really built up that they exist in this town, and it's just like they've just been waiting for their moment, and now they have it. But there's no build up to it. It's just
they seem to buy that there's a cemetery full of demons pretty easily.
Yeah.
They don't need to be sold on.
Whereas
that.
Like, it'd have been nice to have that built up a little bit. And the demons, like, there's a lot there. Like the porcupine girl.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Where I dreamed of her and she's like, oh, I had a dream of him. And then she's like gone. She shows up to shoot spikes at the end. And
yeah.
It's like,
and I was like, well, did she die? Because I honestly lost count of...
You just see so many people and demons getting shot and stuff. But, I mean, at that point, you're not really connected to any demons except for Boone and the lady and the skinhead guy.
Yeah, the guy that cut his face off. Speaking of Boone, actually the actor, Craig Sheffer, this was the start of a pretty good run for him. He had this movie, A River Runs Through It, Fire in the Sky, and The Program that he was involved in all in about a 3-year stretch. And if for no other reason to keep working, but that mullet was pretty serious. And I give him a ton of credit for trying to serious his way through the movie, because he does seem very earnest despite what's going on. Whatever emotion he was given, he was really trying to give it his all.
Yeah. Side note, did you know there was a Teen Wolf series in 86?
I did. I used to watch it. It was a cartoon.
Oh, okay. Because he was on that.
He was the voice of Biff, which I found in his IMDb too.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do remember the Teen Wolf cartoon.
He's one of those that, like, yeah, I see him and it's like, oh, I know Craig Sheffer. But then, like, other than Nightbreed and maybe The Program, I don't really think of anything. But he's been working since mid-80s and, like, he's still working. I mean, he's had a solid career. Nothing major. He's transitioned into a lot of TV and stuff, but he gives it his all in this? Like,
he does. I mean, on the one hand, the movie is rather silly. The plot, you know, we've kind of said is sometimes questionable, and there's certainly a lot of things happening. He does, in my opinion, have a lot to work with. He's crazy, maybe. Might be a serial killer. Certainly a monster coming to grips with living by monster rules. It seems like every time we see him, he's in a different place, and it's like he was given a different emotion card to play for that scene, and it's kind of like an acting reel for him.
Yeah, and I mean, he's essentially carrying the movie, and Bobby's there, who was also in Born on the 4th of July, which was
the same week.
Same week.
Oh, the same week.
I mean, she wasn't bad in it. When it comes to acting, Cronenberg was the bee's knees in this movie.
Yeah, David Cronenberg on the other side of the camera certainly was an interesting choice. He's been known to have some cameos in his own movies or even some smaller roles.
This isn't a cameo.
No.
That's the crazy thing.
No, I mean, he's the antagonist in this movie. It was a very big part, and it didn't necessarily seem like he was just a friend of Clive Barker's that he put in the movie. The guy had that dry air of a scientist.
Just his voice.
Yes, and he also had the evil feels of a killer. So if this is how David Cronenberg is in real life and he wasn't really acting, all right, he Bill Murray'd his way through this role, but it was, I mean, he was believable.
There was something off about him, but he was this professional that it's like, oh, I guess something's off about him, but you don't know how far off. And then when he wanted to be terrifying. He was terrifying. Him pulling off the mask. Like, how do you know my name? And he just pulls the mask off. Like, that's so psychotic. Like, mm-hmm. that's like, this is how. And it's just like, then just puts it back on and hunts and tries to chase her down some more. It's, he was really, really good. And just his delivery of his lines was so chilling and just creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, he's had a ton of roles. I mean, I think my favorite Cronenberg role is where he shows up in Jason X as the doctor, like right at the beginning. He's a lot of fun when you see him on camera. A couple guys you almost saw on camera that were considered for the role of Boone were Rutger Hauer and Christopher Lambert. Yeah, certainly they would have been too old. It would have been hard to see them and Laurie together. But I just feel like Rutger Hauer might have been a really... I would like to have seen him have a crack at this, like, cornucopia of emotion that...
William Sadler, I think, would have been cool. I don't know. Whenever I think of Rutger Hauer, it's like, ah, he's cool, but I'd rather see William Sadler do it. Because I think William Sadler was a more talented Rutger Hauer.
It's easy to take bigger names, quote-unquote, and say, oh, wouldn't the movie have been cooler if they did X or Y or had this guy or that guy? I mean, I don't love this movie, but I don't think that Craig Sheffer is the problem, so to speak.
He's not the problem, but I feel like if you have a better actor in that role, then it adds to the movie, I think. At no point did I ever really care for Boone.
Right.
He was just kind of there. The plot was following him. So to follow him, you got the plot. I don't know. I just feel like if there was an actor that could do more, it would have added even more to the movie. Not that he did bad. He just didn't do great.
Certainly there was plenty to do in the movie. You know, I've said multiple times that he had a lot of emotion to work with, which is specifically maybe in horror movies, one of the criticisms is that there's not really any kind of range for characters to go through. They're either scared or not scared. And certainly Boone from... starting the movie as just a regular working stiff and ending the movie as basically the Demon King, there is quite a transition to go through there.
It ends to where, like, yeah, I could see a second movie. I feel like instead of seeing this story continue, I'd rather see this just turn into a longer and tackle the Free People, the other demons, and how they got there, why you end up there.
Right. To me, I'd be more interested if they were going to do even a traditional... another movie. I'd rather see a prequel to this to find out if there was a home for what are they called? Was it like the Tribe of the Moon or what? I forget what they were called, but I would certainly like to see how they came to inhabit this graveyard.
More about the Berserkers.
Yeah, I just feel like there was a lot of cool stuff that I'm guessing was explained more in the book.
Yeah.
But since I've not read the book and I didn't like the movie enough to make me want to pick up the book, I don't really know, but it just, especially you know, when you see all those cool monsters, you kind of want to know maybe a little bit more about them because at least their look makes you get invested, whereas maybe you weren't as invested in Boone. He didn't really have any kind of cool monster powers. He didn't even look that cool as a demon. But whereas Porcupine Chick, who can invade people's dreams and shoot spikes out of her, that's kind of rad. I don't know about her.
Yeah, I wanted more of her. The naked girl in the prison, she was cool. The black-headed dude and his friend with the stomach snakes.
Yeah?
There's so much there that it's like they don't really make an impression until the last like 20 minutes.
And then it's like, oh, here's a different monster. Do your special move, and then we don't have to hear from you again. Some of the monsters that did stand out, I did like... Hugh Ross's Narcissi or whatever. That was the, what did you call him? Like the skinhead guy? The guy that tried to cut his face off with those thumb knives, which I don't know how the hell he's in a hospital with those things. Like that's the worst hospital staff in the world. But I thought at least that character added some much needed levity to the movie, which really, not that you know you have to have laughs in a horror movie, but certainly... to kind of change pace a little bit, I thought that character was pretty needed.
Yeah, there's not a lot of comic relief in there. He's probably the closest. It's even almost uncomfortable comic relief because, like, yeah, you laugh at this, but I don't know if I should be.
Yeah, and it seems like every one of his lines was kind of intended to be that. If he's on the screen, you're almost waiting for him to say something that's going to be kind of tone deaf. I mean, I don't know that Clive Barker is. He's known for a lot of things. I don't think joke writing is necessarily one of them, and that sort of came across here. But I also did like talked about how maybe David Cronenberg wasn't necessarily a friend of the director that just got cast because he's a friend. Doug Bradley, a.k.a.
Yeah,
Pinhead himself, yeah, finding a place in here. And he was the kind of the leader of the demons. And again, I didn't really see much from him. He's kind of like the de facto leader of this group. And you just have to basically take his word for it that he's the leader. I'm not really sure if he was put there by the demon statue deity that they were worshiping, or I didn't quite understand how their hierarchy worked.
Yeah, because all of a sudden now, like, Cabal is like the dude that gets hired, and then a month later he's your manager. That's pretty much what Boone turned into, was like,
but after your current manager gets shot in the head. Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty much it, though. Like, he just showed up, and he destroys everybody, and then he gets promoted to leader.
Right.
And then leaves.
The leader of a burn. It's like, yeah, if you worked at a retail store, you get hired in a month, that guy's your boss, and he lights the store on fire, and then everybody's still kind of happy with him. It didn't
you
seem
get
like...
hired. A week later, you burn the store down, and then corporate comes and says, oh, you burnt the store down? You're the new manager.
Of this other store, which is, and none of your coworkers are pissed. Hey, this is great. I mean, conceivably, this is all we've ever known. You've managed to completely wreck it by not being able to let go of this woman. Yeah, now we're going to follow you. And I'm sure nothing bad is ever going to happen again.
And then you have the Romeo and Juliet ending.
Certainly.
Where Lori gutting herself.
Yeah, she kind of forces him to night breed her.
So that they can get their breeding. On.
Yeah, they're night breeding together. You know, like you said, that could have set it up for a...
Because you have the preacher. Like, you set up a new villain at the end.
Right.
The preacher. There's a lot going on in this movie.
There's a lot going on, and I felt like, certainly with Hellraiser and with Candyman, those did become franchises, maybe before that was even really a word. But I feel like this one was set up for the sequel, at least from a story standpoint, use those air quotes again around story. But I think just that poor box office, really, we focus a lot more on it nowadays, or maybe they did then too. It just wasn't a thing that average folk talked about. But I guess it just doesn't really make sense to invest in a movie that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. You realized very quickly with Candyman and Hellraiser that you had a hit on your hands with those movies, and I think similarly you realized with this one that you didn't have a hit. So I don't think you're disappointed by not getting a sequel, but certainly they left some ends that could have been picked up.
Yeah, it's a solid movie. I hadn't watched it from front to back in a while. I think my feelings on it have lessened mm-hmm. with a recent watch, but I mean, it's still solid. It's still an epic horror movie. It's ambitious. It does what it wants to do, and it tries to do a lot. And I don't think it fails miserably at anything, really. Like, yeah, there are holes, but from just start to finish, it's a watchable movie that I think keeps you in it the whole time.
And to be honest, even with the holes that there are in the plot, I think it's actually easier to follow than Hellraiser is. It's hard to talk about Clive Barker specifically and not reference that franchise an awful lot. But we're talking about a demon horror story, kind of, so you kind of do have to compare the two. It's
the creator of Hellraiser.
Right. It sort of is, you know, apples to apples at that point. But, you know, that movie, while it is a horror story, I think the story in that one's really kind of tough to follow when it doesn't really make a whole hell of a lot of sense. I feel like Nightbreed is probably more accessible to more people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you going to say it's more family friendly?
In a way.
Yeah.
In a way.
Which it certainly is as compared to Hellraiser. I mean, that one certainly isn't for the family. That movie's fine, but I think that, you know, the real reason to kind of get into Hellraiser is just taking a look at the creatures. I don't think people are, and maybe they are, but by and large, I don't think you can be really that engrossed in the story. But at least there seemed to be more of a cohesive story in this one. It just lacked some of the shock visuals that I think Hellraiser did. And they're, oh God, you got to see this movie. It's so whacked. You'll never believe that this dude doesn't have any skin and he's walking around. It's awesome. I just think that Nightbreed is kind of a watered down version of that from a shock standpoint. Well, that'll just about wrap it up for our first movie episode of the month. Kind of a standalone episode, I guess, Clive Barker's Nightbreed with a little bit of Hellraiser mixed in there on the side. Next week, for actually the next 2 weeks, we've got kind of themes in the way things worked out. We sort of scrapped our original plan for next week. We are going to do What We Do in the Shadows, and then to keep the vampire theme, we thought we might hit The Lost Boys. That's been in the news relatively recently for having the TV show announced for that.
And Corey Feldman on the Today Show.
And that as well.
Which was scarier than anything we'll talk about this month.
The following week, we decided we really wanted to do Dead Alive because that's, I think Dave and I both like that movie an awful lot. And then I guess sort of in the way Nightbreed came up in the Danny Elfman list, so did The Frighteners. And that kind of got us to thinking, well, let's just do a Peter Jackson week. A guy not necessarily nowadays known for horror, but before he went to Middle Earth, he certainly
stayed there.
Certainly that was a guy that had made his mark with horror, and I think we have movies on sort of opposite ends of the spectrum. You have Dead Alive, which is like a giant gross out zombie gore fest, and then The Frighteners, which I guess would be the Nightbreed of that, the more family friendly one. That's kind of it for our next 2 weeks. We're gonna do vampires, and then Peter Jackson will wrap up the month of Halloween, or the month of October, with Saw and our much-anticipated, never-duplicated Halloween special. If you have any thoughts on Nightbreed, or if you want to send us some thoughts on any of the movies that we are going to take a look at, What We Do in the Shadows, Lost Boys, Dead Alive, or The Frighteners, we'd love to hear about them. You can get at us on the Twitter, at MoviesOnUp, or the Facebook page, facebook.com/MoviesOnUp. Anything you want to plug, Dave?
Created Weekly. I write a new short story every week. That's createdweekly.com.
Going to be spooky stories for this month?
I don't know. I don't plan that far ahead. Ask me Friday morning because the stories post Friday afternoon.
Fair enough.
And then Dave and Mike have Daddy Issues. It's my other podcast. We call it Daddy Issues, but it's just me and Mike Kalinich talking pretty much about anything. It's going to be very election heavy this week.
Because the kids are voting?
Yeah. Basically how you explain to your kids what's going on this in the world right now. So that's Dave and Mike Have Daddy Issues. You can find that at daddyissues.net.
You can find us at moviesonup.com. You can also find us, hopefully, in your ears next week with our discussion on What We Do in the Shadows and The Lost Boys. But until then,
keep it up.